next case, Rivera versus Sharp. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Charlie Angerman, and I represent the appellants here in this matter as I have for the last 14 years. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Done.
I'm going to refer to the appellants here as Choice. Choice did not get what it had agreed to, what it was promised, and therefore they didn't have to pay. As Choice's general counsel said 12 years ago in his sworn statement, Choice would not have entered into the settlement agreement without the strong confidentiality terms included in the agreement.
Okay. We got a few questions here. So yeah. Well, let's just launch right into this argument.
Sure.
So the district court said, and I'm trying to understand your position about why this is wrong, that you appear to want the full benefit of this bargain and not carry any of the burden. In other words, you move to enforce, and the other side did too. We had, in effect, cross motions, and so any argument that you had about the breach of confidentiality provision is something that you're ill-positioned to complain about because you said, I want this agreement enforced. Now, how do we accept the procedural reality of this case, which is it comes up to us after a decision on your motion, your meaning your client's motion for summary judgment to enforce, and your assertion that somehow you should be relieved of the burdens of the contract that you want enforced?
Yeah, our position is that we should, at this point we will concede that the summary judgment motion should have been denied. We were not entitled to have the dismissal happen. But let's go back in time to when we rescinded the contract. The matter was already dismissed. The magistrate judge had dismissed the case with prejudice. We were then still discussing what the final minute details of the written agreement was that was going to memorialize the settlement agreement that had been reached in September of 2009. We were working on those things, nothing to do with the fact that confidentiality was a material term of the agreement from day one, but we needed to get it in writing. We needed to know exactly what it was that the agreement was, because we had this problem with Attorney Roan's office. I have this problem with Attorney Roan's office.
Can you clarify? You said when we rescinded the argument. I understand that's your claim on appeal, but where was that argument pressed below, and what was the finding on this rescission argument?
Yeah, so on January 25th of 2010, we sent the letter rescinding the agreement that we did not have to pay. And at that point, and based on the material breach of the confidentiality provision that had started on November 25th, right, 2009 and continued.
Where did you make that argument below? Where did you make this argument, and what is the finding on the claim of rescission? Because I understand you did. I mean, my understanding is you're making that argument now, but it's never before claimed that was rescission.
No, we had rescinded the contract. They moved to enforce.
That's not the question.
Right. We had rescinded, and we made that argument in our opposition to the motion to enforce this. So the second motion to enforce, we said the contract was rescinded. We had the right to rescind based on the material breach. We made that argument in the summary judgment motion and in the reply to the summary judgment motion. And in the reply to the summary judgment motion, we specifically said the contract was rescinded. We had the right to rescind based on the material breach.
Question for an earlier date. Why had you not already paid what you were due to pay under the settlement agreement.
The settlement agreement required a written release as to a written complete release with all the material terms of the agreement in it. We were negotiating what those terms were. Our payment was due promptly after the execution of the settlement agreement, which we did not get a signed settlement agreement from the plaintiff until January 12th of 2010. And I have had, and we have pending in front of the district court appellate division for the last 14 years as well, a case on meeting of the minds and whether a settlement agreement had been reached or not. After we said it was reached, Attorney Roan's office said that it wasn't. We hadn't had a meeting of minds on the terms. The Superior Court agreed. We went to trial. We got the verdict. We took that up on appeal to the appellate division. We briefed that in 2008, and that matter is still pending in front of the appellate division. So this was an issue that was...
Is that decided or not decided by Judge Lewis's decision? Judge Lewis's decision not effectively decide the matter by saying there was a contract when
yeah, there was a contract. Attorney, she found
when Attorney Roan signed it, there was a binding contract, which means there was a meeting of the minds.
Right. So, and then she said it was breached twice, two material breaches of that agreement. And after the first of the material breaches, we rescinded the agreement. So we had a binding contract that we then rescinded on January 25th of 2010 in our letter. And then the second motion to enforce was filed.
But you were simultaneously seeking to enforce the agreement. I guess that's...
We didn't seek to enforce the agreement until... Sorry, I apologize. If you weren't complete, no. We didn't seek to enforce the agreement until the 2018 summary judgment motion.
But once you say, look, no doubt there was an extraordinary length of time here. Mm-hmm. But, and the courts can, you know, maybe hang their head a little bit on that, but that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that your client chose to seek to enforce the settlement agreement. So,
and that motion
I'm trying to square up your assertion that this is a rescinded contract with the legal position that you've taken in the court that this is an agreement and it ought to be enforced. Once you say to the court, this is an agreement, it's binding, enforce it. Haven't you necessarily walked away from any kind of claim that there's not an agreement?
What we're saying is that at the time of the breach, we were excused from performing our agreement.
At the time of the breach, I'm talking about where we are today, Mr. Engelman. Where we are today is on appeal from a legal position taken in court, which is, was, and still is, this should be enforced. It should be enforced the way we like it, but it's an agreement and it should be enforced. How can that coexist with the argument that that you rescinded the agreement?
Well, the agreement, there was an agreement. There was an agreement with the material confidentiality provision. The material confidentiality provision was breached by the plaintiff, which allowed us to stop performing the agreement.
I'm completely familiar with your argument. I understand your argument. What I'm asking you to do is to answer what appears to me a logical inconsistency. And maybe I'm just being obtuse, but whether or not, you don't have to answer that, but whether or not there was a rescission or an attempted rescission before, doesn't all that just like go out the window once you go to court and say, this is the agreement, we want it enforced, doesn't that mean without any question, we're in it? This is an agreement we're in, and we want the court to use the power of government to make it stick. How can that position in court coexist with an argument of rescission? Aren't those things just like mutually inconsistent? Matter and antimatter, big explosion. Like, how can they be happening at the same time?
Our position is that to the extent that we requested dismissal in September of 2018, we probably shouldn't. At that point, but again, up until that point, we never requested dismissal because it was already dismissed.
Yeah, but dismissal has, like, I don't even understand how dismissal has anything to do with it. Your position was still on summary judgment, enforce the agreement.
Yeah,
in front of us is enforce the agreement, except don't make us pay.
No, right, we don't have to pay because we are excused in the performance by their two material breaches. The district court found that one of the material breaches was waived by our conduct in continuing to get the document finalized, and that the other material breach was waived because later we asked for the court to dismiss the case. And again, in the asking for continued performance afterwards.
Okay.
Let's
move on from that for a second. And we've just got a few seconds left on your time, but let's shift. Let's assume for the sake of discussion that we didn't think you could say enforce, but don't hold us to our part of the bargain. And you were going to be, your client was going to be on the hook. If we thought that and we got into the question of prejudgment interest, I mean, you've made arguments about that too.
Yeah.
Speak to us about our Addy case.
Yeah.
And whether or not Addy forecloses the prejudgment interest argument you've made.
I will concede that Addy forecloses the prejudgment interest if the money was due. Our position is that the money was not due during the period of time that the magistrate judge's opinion was in effect saying that you did not have to pay. And if the court says we do not have to pay, we don't have to pay until the court gets that reversed.
All right. Okay. That helps. I understand your argument. Okay. Judge Roth? I don't think so. Okay. Then we'll have you back on rebuttal, Mr. Engman, and we'll hear from Ms. Lawrence.
Good morning. Rhea Lawrence on behalf of the appellee, Abneris Rivera. The court has nailed exactly what we've been trying to articulate with regard to this appeal, is that they have never sought rescission. Their position before the district court was that they were entitled to enforcement. We also sought enforcement. She gave the parties exactly what they wanted. They wanted enforcement with her writing into the agreement a $350,000 liquidated damages clause. And she said, there's no way I can do that. So she provided the relief that everyone requested, which was enforcement.
Let me ask you this, because there's a factual underpinning here in the district court's decision that I've been wondering about. The court, if I have my facts right here, when we get into January of 2010, Choice sends to your client, to Ms. Rohn's office, to your office.
Yes.
The MRI in what they presumably think is the final form that they want, and your colleague Ms. Rohn, she makes some hand marked up changes to it and sends it back to them.
Yes, and they said they didn't want that, to execute it as is, and
That's not in the record, right? The, like what they come back with and say in response, is that in the record that they did something to say we don't want it and we're still in negotiation? Because I might have missed it, but what it looked like is she marked it up and sent it back, and they did let her know that in some fashion it was unacceptable, but then she signed it and sent it back.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yes.
If and just standard old contract stuff, hornbook stuff, if there's an offer and then there's an attempt, a counteroffer, does the counter, which is what marking up the contract meant, a counteroffer, and that's rejected, is she free at that point to just say, okay, I'm going back to your original offer, or is that offer off the table? Do you understand what I'm trying to ask?
Not necessarily, but in terms of the revisions of the release,
just that there's a, just as contract law, there's an offer, it's given to her, she rejects it by marking it up and sends it back. What I'm wondering is, as a matter of law, not even worried about rescission, just as a straight up matter of contract law, does she have the right to go back to what she rejected before and resurrect it by signing it and sending it back? Or at that point, you know, does she have to somehow negotiate with them to give it back to her and let her have another crack at it?
I guess in terms of offer, counter offer, our position is when she sent that handwritten release back, That was her sending them her version of the release with her changes. They rejected that. And she, in order to just, you know, put this thing to rest, signed it, signed that version that they then sent back to her without the changes that she made.
There you go. That's a big question. As a factual matter, did they resend to her the unmarked up version?
Yes.
So they tendered that offer to her again.
Yes, and then she accepted it. And then she signed it and said, you know what, let's put this to bed.
Thank you. You've resolved the factual question.
Okay, that's how she put it to bed, because this was going on for a long time. There was just it was a matter of let's get this done now and let it be over with in terms of getting Ms. Rivera the settlement proceeds that were due to her. And the district court nailed it. The district court, in her opinion, you can tell that she was not going to be complicit in what was clearly an attempt by the employers to get Ms. Rivera to sign a release and then using language in that release say that she breached it months before. In her mind, and in our mind, that was the height of duplicitous conduct.
Well, there clearly was a breach. I mean, there was a confidentiality agreement, and Attorney Rohn filed a public document and exposed the terms. I mean, you're really going to take the position that it wasn't a breach to take the confidential terms of the agreement and put it out there in the public?
And which one? The November 2009 filing?
Well, yeah, it happened twice. Thank you for noting that. It didn't just happen once. It happened twice.
Well, let's go to the November 2009 filing. You know, it could have been filed unsealed on the docket with the court. However, there was a merger clause in that agreement that was signed that says there was no prior breach.
Let's just, now you've gone past it, right? I understand that you're now in the waiver portion of Judge Lewis's argument.
Yes.
But it's clear as a factual matter, whether they waived it or not, that there was a breach, that filing that on the public docket was a breach of confidentiality. I mean, I don't see why there's any margin in it for you to try to downplay that. You just ought to own it. But are you saying that you didn't think that's a breach?
I'm not saying it wasn't a. It was not a breach in terms of where we are now with the merger clause. That's the problem.
Well, there may have been a waiver. Okay, so take.
I understand that, and if our argument is, if she was forced to then move to enforce the agreement, without this MSA, she would have been successful, because their whole argument was that they have this agreement that says there's a breach of confidentiality provision that's material, and therefore you breached it back in November 2009. Remember, this was the second motion to force. She filed the first one.
Yeah, and if she hadn't put it on the public docket, we probably would never be here, right? We're here because she filed it publicly and then wrote him a note and said, that's what you get.
Your Honor, could it have been done differently?
Oh, yes. My God.
Does it excuse performance? No. That's where we are today. Yeah. Do we get from there to the situation where now they get to non-perform in terms of don't pay the $350 and her case gets dismissed? That's what they're seeking for. They want enforcement of this agreement. So I don't believe that those prior acts gives them the justification for the enforcement relief they're seeking. They sought before the district court and they sought now, mainly because they requested specifically that she sign this merger clause. And I just don't understand why they would think
how does that deal with the second breach, though, right? The merger clause, that I get your argument that takes care of the first one. How does that manage to address the second public filing? How's it manage that?
Well, in terms of the second one, they didn't ask for rescission. And that's what the district court said. The district court says if you had asked for rescission, if you had asked for damages, maybe we'd be in a different ballgame here. But you didn't ask for it. I have also argued, and I think it's a correct interpretation, is that they themselves have filed terms on the docket when seeking enforcement.
Did they expose the sum of money?
Yes, they did. And we demonstrated that. They put on the docket that $25,000 of her funding was supposed to go towards back pay. That's part of the settlement amount.
Okay, so that you think is tantamount and the same as publicizing the full amount of the
yes, and then in moving for summary judgment, they cut and pasted terms of the agreement on the docket. So I don't like things being used as a sword and a shield. And you know, there's an old saying, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Well, you know, you don't see a material difference between putting the whole document out and putting parts of the document out.
If the agreement you're relying on says all terms are to be treated confidential, you cannot pick and choose which terms you are going to challenge and what terms not to. I mean, if you look at their summary judgment briefing, and we put all of this in the record when they filed their motion to have the district court record sealed before your court. And we demonstrated just how much of that very same agreement that the employers themselves put on the docket as a part of this whole enforcement mechanism, this court enforcement proceeding before the district court. They have just chosen to pretend as if the $350,000 was somehow the only term that was supposed to be kept confidential, when that's not what the agreement says at all.
Okay.
So besides not ever seeking rescission, they sought enforcement. They unequivocally denied any request for damages repeatedly. We highlighted this all in our brief. I just don't see how we get to the point where this judge, who I believe the standard of review is clearly erroneous, has done anything that reaches the clearly erroneous standard.
Why don't you answer the assertion that Mr. Angerman has made, that they did ask for rescission in the district court, that they argued it in their papers, including in their reply brief?
They did not. And it was a part of the entire briefing. It is not. And that's why when we saw it in their opening brief that we rescinded, that became the biggest shock I've seen, because I know for sure that was not the relief that they sought. They did not seek rescission. They sought enforcement. And as a part of enforcement, they wanted her to write in a liquidated damages clause of $350,000. They've never sought rescission, because rescission would have meant that you put the parties back to where we were before there were settlement. That was never the relief that they sought. They've never sought damages. They've never sought rescission. They sought enforcement. And they repeated it over and over again before the district court. And the district court was clear in her opinion: I am giving you the relief that you asked for, enforcement of this agreement.
Okay.
Now, with regard to, I know that they had a bunch of ancillary issues about banks analysis and the failure to do a banks analysis. I don't know if you have any questions with regard to that at all.
Nope.
What else was there? I mean, nothing in this particular case reeks of harmful error, which is what this court has to figure out, especially in this old case. This case is very old. Is there any reason for us to kick this case back to the district court because she did something harmful here? And I just don't see how they meet that standard. I think that's all I have. I know I have to be before you at 1 o'clock, so in the Claxton case. So unless there's any more questions.
I don't have any, Judge Mady. Judge Roth?
I have no questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Lawrence. Ms. Rangman, we'll hear your rebuttal.
Defendants appropriately opted to pursue the alternate option of excused performance, page 13 of 15 of our reply brief in the joint appendix at 511. We argued it below. That's what the excused performance is, what we asked for. We were excused from our performance based on their material breach.
So wait, you think that saying enforce this, but give us, but excuse our performance is the same as saying rescission.
Yeah, from, right.
Well, rescission means treat the contract as if it never existed. It doesn't mean hold the other side to the contract and let us out. Does it?
At that point, again, in January of 2010, when they finally agreed to what the terms of the settlement agreement were, and that they had already and were continuing to materially breach that, they materially breached it in November. What they were arguing below, I mean, we have this whole waiver of waiver issue that you're not going to get.
Stick with me.
Okay.
Stay on the point I'm asking,
I'm sorry.
Which is just a pure legal question. You're quoting from what you say is the assertion of rescission, and it's language that says, excuse our performance.
Right.
Do you have any legal authority for the idea that excusing one side's performance, but holding the other side to perform is the same as or equivalent to a rescission of a contract?
I cannot give you a cite for that.
Because rescission means the contract's gone. It's not excuse our performance and hold the other side, right?
Right, but at the point where we are, if we go back to January of 2010, when we have finally documented up what the agreement is, and it has been materially breached, we are entitled to excuse performance. We do not have to do anything further at that time. What happened subsequent to that is, and it, what had happened at that time when we were excused from further performance was that the contract was already, I mean, that the district court case was already dismissed with prejudice. That's where we were when we made that decision. We had not waived anything. We were never given an opportunity to argue or brief waiver. That is a reversible error. If you're going to rely on waiver, we had an opportunity to put on evidence.
Do we have to even think about waiver when there is a signature on the contract that says nobody has breached the confidentiality of this agreement?
No, the parties can covenant that they have not breached.
Yeah, like, but it's a representation. It says
Choice was covenanting that we haven't breached.
Well,
we can't covenant for what they've done or not done, and we can't covenant for what they do in the future.
No, but you can make a statement that you can be held to, which is the parties covenant that at no time prior to the date of this mutual release have the parties reviewed, discussed, or disclosed orally and in writing.
Right, but parties...
That's a statement that is not forward-looking, it's backward-looking.
Right, but we covenanted that we had not, as the parties.
No.
Right, our parties.
I just read it to you.
Right, but we are not saying that they have not covenanted. I mean, we can't...
Well, I can't engage on an argument where you're telling me that the language that I'm reading to you, the parties isn't... It doesn't say choice. It says the parties. The parties to the agreement are the choice entities and... Right. Ms. Rivera.
And it says the parties covenant, I mean, that they will not breach in the future.
No, it doesn't. It says that at no time prior to the date of this agreement have they discussed, disclosed, et cetera. That's the language that got picked.
Right. And then the next language is in the future, the same language, the parties covenant that they will not breach.
True.
Right. But
that doesn't deal right. But that wipes out the November stuff. Now we're talking about the 2010 stuff. And I understand you've got an argument about that. But your assertion that there's reversible error because of the decision that the district court made that there was waiver, I don't see how you get traction on that when you guys signed a document.
We did not sign the document.
Oh.
We did not sign the document. We sent the doc. That language had never changed. We did not sign the document after they breached.
Oh, have you asked for us to enforce it?
No, we've asked you in this appeal, we've asked you to remand it, say that there was not a waiver, vacate the decision and reverse.
Did you ask the district court to enforce? That would have been a better way to put it.
We asked the district court to enforce the material, that there was material breach and that we were not obligated to pay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, we got you. Thanks. We have the arguments. We'll take a matter under advisement. We appreciate counsel being here and recess court.
Thank you.